Share number 46. Tomorrow is Yud Aleph Adar, Tashin Samach Zayin, which we all know is tomorrow. This year we'll have Tanis Esther, and Sunday Mit Hashem, Habalon Otayva will be Purim. Tonight is part 3 of Yehi Chavod, and tonight we will discuss specifically one pasuk in Yehi Chavod, and that will be an introduction to Purim as well. In the blue, our scroll sitter, the Chaim Shlomo, on page 30, line number 3. That's our pasuk for this evening. Rabbis Machshoves Blev Ish, Ba'atzas Hashem Hisakum. In the regular our scroll sitter, it's page 66, or 67 in the English page. And basically, as we discussed, that last week we mentioned Hashem Melech, Hashem Molach, Hashem Yimelech Lo'ilam Vaed, Hashem is our King, Hashem was, Hashem will always be our King. Continues the tefillah, Hashem Melech Oilam Vaed, Avdu Goyim Yartzoi, Hashem Hefir Atzas Goyim, Heini Machshavos Amim, Amim, Rabbois Machshavos Blevish, Va'atzas Hashem Hisakum, Atzas Hashem Lo'ilam Tamvaed Machshavos Tibol Ador Vador. Hashem shall reign for all eternity. Hashem reigns forever and ever, even when the nations will have perished from His earth. Hashem annuls the council of nations. He balks the designs of peoples. Many designs are man's heart, but the council of Hashem, only it will prevail. The council of Hashem will endure forever, the designs of His heart throughout the generations. Rabbois Machashavois Belevish, Ba'atzas Hashem Hisakum. There are many thoughts, Belevish, in the heart of man. However, it's only Atzas Hashem, the Eitzah, the mindset, the advice of Hashem Hisakum. Yes, we didn't say anything yet. Okay, go for it.
I had a general question about Kabbalah.
Okay.
So you may have covered this.
Okay.
Okay. This is a very important.
Yes, it is.
It says in the art scroll, it says, you have to say this prayer with special intensity. Yet, we sit down for it.
Okay.
In other words, you do Mizmor L'Sod, you're standing up.
Okay.
Then everyone sits down and does Yichavod, then Ashrei, and then the five Halukas, and then,
okay.
And then they stand up for Yivareth David. So,
right.
So, if you say it with such intensity, why are we sitting down?
Well, it seems like the basis of your question is that if something is so important, we should be saying it standing up. Right?
Yes.
So I don't know if that's so correct. I mean, the reason why we stand, for example, by the carbon atomid is because that carbon would be brought and the carbon would be standing up. Mizmor L'Sod is, as we mentioned, like a carbon toda. So we'd be standing when we say that. There is an aspect of saying certain tefillos and brachas sitting down. Because sitting down is a state of mind of more mental relaxation. The person can concentrate even better.
Like Shema,
to some degree.
Right?
Shema Nesai, where we're standing straight in front of God, it's not appropriate to be sitting down. So, I don't know if the basis of the question is really, you know, if it's more important or less important, so we should be standing or sitting in that case. In that, you know, we do stand because we're right in front of Hashem by Shema Nesai. Yehi Chavod has its special, it is a special tefillah. And that's why it said that we should say it with special intensity. I should know, you're not the first to mention this, that you read that part in our school. They did a very good job there. Everybody's been reading that part.
Okay.
So, okay?
Okay.
I think it has to do with paying respect. If it's something where you pay respect, you stand up.
Well, that definitely is a true fact. I mean, but we're paying respect throughout the whole entire davening. You know, but we don't have to stand the whole entire davening,
yeah,
right? Right. Okay, with Dovah Shebek Dusha, something which is Dovah Shebek Dusha, Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch Hu, those type of things we stand up for. Okay? Those things which, like Kaddish, you know, we're mentioning, we're saying that God's name should be elevated, and those type of things, those filos are mentioned that we should stand up for that. We'll discuss some more at another time.
Should one know, based on what the hirot are, whether a person should be standing up or not? Or is it just they know by custom on this one is standing?
Well, no, I mean, he should know what the tefillah represents, and sometimes that tells us whether or not he should be standing. For example, we mentioned the Mizmor Lesoda is like a karban, an offering, a sacrifice. One would be standing there that time. So the tefillah is in place of the karban, so he stands as well. Okay? Let's continue over here with a Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Gemara tells us on Daf Chavav Amud Beis, Gemara tells us that Rabbis Machshavas Blavish Vatzas Hashem Hisakum. If a person has daigos b'leiv, he has worries in his heart, it's not healthy for him. As we all know, stress is not good for the person physically, right? Not only is it not good for him physically, the Gemara tells us, Rashi tells us, and the Tosafot explain that it can also cause a person to forget his learning. And it could also cause a person to have financial issues as well. What's the explanation? So when we say the words Rabbis Machshavas Blavish V'Atzas Hashem Hisakum, we're saying that man has many thoughts. He feels he can accomplish, he can achieve. But it's incorrect. It's only Atzas Hashem Hisakum. It's only if it's God's desire and God's will, then only will at that point in time will he be successful. So many times man feels, I'll be successful because I have the power, I have the strength, I have the intellect, I can achieve. And that's the opposite of emunah. That's taking God out of the picture. So a person is worry in this regard is taking God out of the picture. There's lack of emunah. We come now to a beautiful Shlach Kodesh. The Shlach Kodesh tells us as follows. In regards to the dveikus, the closeness, clinging to Hashem, a person should say on every single act, every single day of his life, whether it's a big act, a small act, going to buy a bottle of milk, or going to a big act, put that dollar and pick out those lottery numbers, whatever it might be. Okay. Real big act, whatever the big act might be. He should say what? He should say, "Im yirtzeh Hashem." If Hashem wants it to be, it will be. Even if it's something that's going to happen right away in 2 minutes from now, he's going right now to the store to get the bread for the breakfast in the morning. How many times does a person put the key in the car and sometimes it doesn't start? Then he looks in the back of the car, he sees it has a flat tire, whatever it might be. Hopefully it doesn't happen too often. It's not supposed to. But it happens sometimes. Im yirtzeh Hashem, he sakum, rather, atzas Hashem he sakum, the advice, the counsel, the wisdom of God, then it will be sakum, it will last, endure forever. The Shlach tells us, you take the word he, aleph, yud, hey, backwards, he backwards, is aleph, im, yud, Yetzah, hey Hashem. Im Yetzah Hashem. Atzas Hashem, he sakum. It's the counsel of God. It's the advice of God. It's the idea that Hashem puts in a person's mind. He sakum. It's only going to survive that idea, that mindset, Im Yetzah Hashem, if Hashem is incorporated in the picture. If Hashem is left out of the picture, if it's koichi v'oitzim yodi, also lisa chayla zeh, if it's koichi, my strength, and my power that made me this victory, then the person won't be successful. He's taking Hashem out of the picture. Hashem says, you're out of the picture. You're fired. Goodbye. You won't be successful. And sometimes we see people seem to be successful. But as we all know, until the game is over, it doesn't matter what the score is in the sixth inning. Bottom nine, 2 outs, still doesn't matter. Until the game is over, the final out. Right? And we see this very clearly by Yosef HaTzadik, where it says by him, when he was in Mitzrayim, the lowest of the lows, of all places in the world, the morality level was non-existent. But yet he still survived, and he was Yosef at Tzaddik, and he raised two children. And Yaakov Avinu said that these two children are my two children. And they are Ephraim and Manasseh, Keruven and Shimon, Yuli. They are like the Shvatim, the great Shiftei Kah, the holy Tzaddikim. Imagine raising them in such an environment. How is he successful? How do you survive? Ki Hashem ito, Hashem was with him. The Medrash Tanchuma tells us, Shem Shemayim Shogi Bafiv, the name of God was constantly in his mouth. Always saying, always moving his lips, always davening to Hashem. No matter what he's doing. I just want to tell you, I was listening to my Rebbe, Brevda Shlita, one of my Rebbeim, and I was listening, borrowing my friend's MP3 player. And I wouldn't recommend that brand, that's the first thing. And with the way it works is when you want to fast forward something, you have to keep your thumb, your finger, on the fast forward button. And if you press it accidentally a second time, it skips to the next, whatever is on, the next program. Without exaggeration, it happened to me rewinding fast forward over 10 times. That I'm trying to listen and just go a little fast because I heard this part already. Finally I said, you know what? I'm learning something here. Yes, Hashem, it should go well. That time, it worked. Baruch Hashem, I'm telling you. Enough of this. Can't imagine starting from the beginning, the back, skipping over, and I don't know how to use the machine, and then going to the next one, this one, and Yemirta Hashem, and Baruch Hashem, it worked. So he had Shem Shemayim Shaga Befiv. Hashem's name was always with him. They saw him always moving his mouth. They thought some type of witchcraft, whatever it was, but they didn't care. He was being successful. Everything that happened, let's take a look for a second. He was thrown in a pit by with his brothers, taken out, down to the Mitzrayim, sold from here to there. In a house, things are going well, and then the ladies after him, Ishes Potiphar. Then he's thrown to a dungeon for years. And then, he's finally rescued by Hashem. And he's made second in command. Rabbi is machshavas blev ish va'atzas Hashem hisakum. If a person has many thoughts in his mind but he doesn't incorporate Hashem, that's what it means. Rabbi is machshavas blev ish. There are many, many thoughts a person thinks about. He'll be successful here. It's been 35 years. He's playing the lottery. It's about his time, right? It's only fair. Why should that foreigner? Custodian cleaning Central Park, why should he win that $35 million? Sounds good. It happened a few years ago. I think it was more than $35 million. Sunday, Mitzvah Hashem, we have the Yontif of Purim. Yontif of Purim, as we say the words of Nahafaychu, turned around. Things looked one way, and at the end, if you will, at the end of the game, bottom of the ninth, the game was over, Hashem showed us who's in charge. It wasn't Achashverosh, it wasn't Haman. Around 55, 56 years before the whole Purim story happened, which lasted around 11, 12 years, depending on which shul you go to, it's 45 minutes, 35 minutes, 10 chapters, but it was a while. Around 55, 56 years before that, Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha, Nebuchadnezzar built an idol, a statue that was very thin and went up very high. And according to laws of physics, engineering, you'd have to put a third of it into the ground. But it wasn't a third, it was not in the ground. And now from the top was saying, I am your God. I am your God. And he had people from all over the world coming down and they were told you have to bow down to this idol. How is this possible? How did he say this? Because he took the tzitz from the base of Migdash. that had the shame of Hashem, the name of God in it, on it, and he put it inside the mouth, and it was saying, "I am your God, I am your God." Until Daniel went up there and he said he's going to kiss the mouth, and he commanded it to go out, and it collapsed. But before that happened, the Jews bowed down to the idol. And they did not do tshuva. The Jews who were there present at the time, they bowed down. Except for who? Hanan, Mishael, and Azariah. They were thrown into Kivshan Ha'esh, the furnace. And Hashem made a nace for them, and they survived. But the Jews did not do tshuva. And the Midas Adin, the Satan Yetzirah, the Yetzirah was hovering over them. And it was knocking on Hashem's door. And then he was telling Hashem, we have to punish them. No one's doing tshuva. They bowed down, idolatry, Avodah Zarah. 55, 56 years later, comes along Achashverosh. Many of us remember years ago, it wasn't so many years ago, a few years ago, I was walking with my oldest child, my daughter, and she's telling me that Haman's a Rasha, Haman's an evil man. So I told her, Achashverosh also, he's also Rasha. She tells me, no, Haman's a Rasha. Like, you know, Abi got it wrong a little, you know, I got the story wrong. Because the teachers sometimes do a great job, but they portray Haman is the Rasha, and Achashverosh is that silly king. Rashi tells us very clearly, right in the beginning of the Megillah, who Achashverosh, who Rosh mitchilos vat soifa, he was an evil man from beginning to end. He hated the Jews. And he wanted to destroy them. And came along this man, his advisor, Haman. And Haman gave him the way, the idea, to satisfy his king. Now, who was Achashverosh? He was a stable boy. He didn't come from royalty. So what did he do? He had to marry royalty. He married Vashti, the granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar that we just mentioned. What else did he do? He threw a party. He threw a party and everybody was invited, as well as the Jews. And Mordechai said, don't go. And they said, what do you mean? The king's inviting. The king's giving us an invitation. We can't ignore it. We have to go. And Mordechai and Tzadik said, don't go. And they went. And at the party, Haman told Achashverosh, of course, beforehand, you want to destroy the Jews? This is what we have to do. Their God hates immorality. Everybody will be there. And you send out some women. They'll do the serving, waitresses. And of course they, you know, like in this generation, they forget to get dressed before they go outside the house. And they don't forget. And that's going to cause the problems. And that's what happened. And they went. And things went wrong. And they did not do tshuva. And the Midas Adin once again is knocking on the door and telling Hashem, this cannot go on. These are your children. They're not following your Torah. They're not keeping your mitzvahs. And the decree went out that they should be destroyed. This was the start, if you will. Nebuchadnezzar, this is from the Gemara, according to the Gra, according to the way that Rav Ravdo Shlita explains it. Let's go back to the party. Ravis Machshos Blevi Shvatas Hashem Hisako. That's our pasuk for tonight. Achashverosh is making a party, and there are a lot of men over there, and the men are drinking. Now these are not your fine gentlemen, if you know what I mean. And what do men think about when they're drinking? So Chazal tell us that each one was saying that the women from their country are the most beautiful. And then some screaming and shouting started happening. Achashverosh said, what's going on about this? What's this ruckus over here? And he found out, and he said, I'm not from Paros, I'm not from Madai. Both of you wrong. My wife, she's the most beautiful. So they said, oh yeah, prove it. Now, let's put this on pause. Go to the other room next door. What's going on next door? Vashti, she's throwing a party also. 1,000 women. Where is she throwing this party? Right next door to Achashverosh. In his chamber. Right next door. She's not supposed to be there. What's she doing there? Why is she throwing a party? Why is Achashverosh throwing the party? Achashverosh needs the party. Because he has to show everybody he's king. He's royalty. He's not a stable boy. He's married to Vashti. The last thing in the world he's going to do is get rid of her. We see over here who's pulling the strings. 1,000 women talking, you can imagine. It wasn't so quiet. They tell Achashverosh, prove it. But, of course, she has to be in her birthday suit. With the crown. And Achashverosh says, okay. He calls her. Now imagine, no king would really do this in a normal situation. This, of course, is Hashem pulling the strings. Hashem is putting it in the mindset, Atzas Hashem, he's Sokom, he's putting the mind of Achashverosh to call Vashti into this situation. And what does Vashti say? She's not coming. Why not? Because Malach Gavriel put a tail, according to one opinion, he put a tail on the back of her. She couldn't come out like that. She wouldn't come out like that. Now what happened next? Now you have a situation where the queen, the lady, the female, defiled the king, the male, the man. Haman says, this is my opportunity. What's my opportunity to do what? Haman failed in class at a certain language that his wife knew. He flunked the course. And he had a very big ego problem. His wife, Zeresh, she was a brilliant lady, and she knew a certain language he didn't know. And he didn't want her talking this language in the house. He couldn't take it. He didn't know it. But she wouldn't listen to him about this. So now he had the opportunity. He tells Achashverosh, you have to get rid of her. You have to kill her. Now once Achashverosh kills Vashti, his throne is shaking now. His royalty is being attacked. So he wouldn't do it. Hashem says, no. You kill her. And what else did Haman do? Haman said as well, that we make a decree that anything that pertains to the king, you don't need your advisors to make a decision. Until this time, there was a situation where the king would discuss matters with his advisors. Things that were pertaining to the king himself. Now, from now on, you make the final decision by yourself. Because Haman's telling Achashverosh, you have to show your power, you're the king. How does this help him? Because now he's going to be able, the men make the decision in the household. Haman is telling Achashverosh, that's how it has to be. The wife has to listen to the husband. Then Zeresh cannot listen, cannot defy the king's orders. And she cannot speak the language anymore. Keep this in mind, because this will be Haman's ultimate downfall. Let's just jump around a little, because we're not going to have time tonight to finish the whole entire story. We don't have 10 years, do we? Rabbis Machshos Blavish V'atzas Hashem Hisakum. Haman tells everybody, bow down to me. And Mordechai doesn't bow down. Mordechai was there to misakin the chet, to correct the sin of what? Of bowing down to the tzelem. Bowing down to the idol by Nebuchadnezzar. He didn't bow down. Esther, what did she do? She refused all those different perfumes and makeups and everything what they were giving out. She refused to have any pleasure from the palace. She was coming to misakin the chet, to correct the sin that the Jews were nenem esudosa shel Achashverosh, that they had pleasure from the Suda, from the party of Achashverosh. The two together, Mordechai and Esther, they were going to misnak in the chait. They were saving Klal Yisrael. How did this happen? Eliyahu Navi went up to Shemayim after the decree went out that the Jews will be killed. Haman spoke to his friend, partner in crime, Achashverosh, and they made a pur, the lot, Purim, they made the lot, and the Jews will be killed. The Jews will be attacked, and they'll have a battle. Eliyahu Navi went up to Shemayim, and finally he spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, and he pleaded to Moshe Rabbeinu to daven to Hashem for the safety of his children. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, is there someone in that generation, a tzaddik, who can daven for them as well? Eliyahu Navi said, yes. Moshe said, I will daven up here, and he has to do his job down there. And immediately, Eliyahu Navi went down. As we know, he has that ability to go up and back and forth. And the tefillah started and didn't stop. The constant davening. Now the davening, the tefillah, what is tefillah? As we say all the time over here, tefillah is emunah. We daven to Hashem, we show Hashem has that power to answer our prayers. So the chisaron of emunah is what caused them this whole problem. Why do they bow down? Because the king, Nebuchadnezzar, told him to. Why'd they go to the Suda? Because Achashverosh invited them. I cannot go. I have to go. If they're told not to go, if Mordechai the Tzaddik says don't go, and he's the leader, they're not supposed to go. If the halacha is, don't bow down to the idol, it's a chil Hashem. You're desecrating God's name. They never did tshuva for it. Lack of emunah. Here the tefillah, the davening, is the total opposite. They are davening to Hashem. Hashem, only you can save us. That same tree, can you imagine what the thought process was? There were no skyscrapers those days. They see this tree 50 amos high. All the Jews see it, and they know what it was for. Because they knew that Haman was going to hang Mordechai at Tzaddik on that tree. What were they thinking in their mind? And what happened at the end? Turned around, Haman and his sons were killed in that same tree. What's the point of this? What's the point of all this? The point of all this is the mechazik our emunah. Not just that happened back then. Esther, the Gemara asked the question, where do you find Esther in the Torah? I will hide my face on that day. We live in Golos, in Choshech, in darkness. And Hester Panim, Hester hidden. We don't see Hashem openly in this world, in this generation. The story of Purim is to come to mechazik our emunah in Hashem. That even though we don't see His hand openly, like in times earlier, but yet that's the lesson of Purim. Sometimes things look very, very bleak. That tree hanging up there, they knew what it was for. Haman, he becomes second in command. It seems like the worst thing that could happen. Haman was the cause for Klal Yisrael to do the ultimate tshuva and come back to Hashem. We find the same thing by Paro. What did Paro want to do? Paro wanted to annihilate us. Chazal say in the pasuk, "But Paro hikri, Paro was coming closer. He brought Klal Yisrael to tshuva. He brought them closer to tshuva. Uparo hikri, he brought us closer to tshuva. Now he was coming physically closer as well. And what did we do in response? We screamed out. We cried out to God. We cried out to our Father in heaven. Sometimes in life things seem very bleak. We don't understand them. Many times. Throughout our history it's like this. The lesson of Purim is coming to tell us this message, this point. The emunah. We don't understand. It's not for us to understand. It's not for us to ask the questions. It's for us to strengthen our emunah. That everything that Hashem does is for the best. Imagine what they were thinking when they saw that tree hanging up there. Their leader, their tzaddik. Put it in practical terms. God forbid if a person knew that their leader of their generation, I don't even want to say it, the time's going to come on that date that his head is going to be hanging from that tree on the top of the biggest building that exists today. That's what's taking place. And what did they do? They didn't pick up the phone. They had more davening, more tefillah. They cried out to the only one who could save them. The 22,000 children that Mordechai at Tzaddik brought together. And they didn't eat and they didn't drink. And they were davening, and their mothers came to them and said, "No, eat and drink, you're gonna die." And they said, "No, we refuse. We're gonna daven and we're gonna fast." And the merit of the tefillah, the tshuva, we were saved. Which is the bigger nes? The nes of Hanukkah? The nes of Purim?
Equal.
Anybody else? Well, I have another possibility. You can't go wrong in the third one because it's, yeah, I mean, only one left, right?
Maybe we say Al-Manisim on both columns, so...
So you want to say it's equal. Okay.
We're always in the same.
Why do you say Purim was greater?
Because ultimately the temple was destroyed.
Well, okay, but ultimately... Well, ultimately we were also persecuted later on. If you want to look at, we're talking the time.
Purim is a metaphor for our entire existence. It's our entire existence dealt with hidden faces of Hashem's will. Whereas Hanukkah is just a particular event.
You get more than partial credit. The answer is correct. Purim is a greater nes, even though Hanukkah had open miracles to a major degree. Different answers are given for this. One answer is because we were not in our home, not in Eretz Yisrael, where there's more Kedusha. We were out in a foreign land where the world runs in a more tevedic, more natural form. And Hashem came and took nature and turned things upside down. There's not one mention of Hashem's name openly in the Megillah. But there are different times throughout. Many times when it says HaMelech just play by itself. So we are told that refers to Hashem. There are different letters that you can put together that refers to Hashem. Hashem's hand is there at a constant basis. It's hidden, right, that's correct. That's what I'm saying. But it's not so much that it was because it was a partial time. Right? Hanukkah was... We're looking at the time of Hanukkah. That was a great name for the time of Hanukkah. The Beis Yeshua, I heard recently, the Beis Yeshua says as follows. Imagine the scene. This he doesn't say, but this is my example. Imagine the scene. Imagine Hitler won the war. And he needs a top number two man to run the country. So who does he pick? The biggest tzaddik, the Jew of the generation. Like, you know, you look at me like, that's a crazy example. Like, why would I even utter those words? Because that's what happened. We had to put it into our practical terms to relate to it. Achashverosh was a rosh mitchilos of atzoifoi. He hated the Jews. And what did he do? he takes a Jew, Mordechai HaTzadik, and he puts him in that position. Rabbi's machshavas belevish, says the Beis Yeshua. Va'atzas Hashem yisakum. Man has many thoughts, but it's only the thought of God that's going to prevail. And Hashem puts it in his mind to put Mordechai HaTzadik in charge. Imagine that. Imagine the big Rasha. If God forbid Hitler would have won the war and puts the big Tzadik in his second command. It doesn't make any sense. Let's just continue. We have a few more minutes. We'll discuss after. It's only because we have a few minutes left. Okay? Here, please. Well, that was before. That's true as well. But that was before. That is correct. That's before he showed his ugly face. We're talking about after they showed the ugly face already. That is correct, though. When I go towards the end of the story, if you will, towards the end of the story, they're by the dinner, the meal. Esther with Haman and Ahasuerus. Esther spills the beans that there's an evil man who wants to destroy my people. Ahasuerus says, "Who is this?" She puts her hand, she points to who? To Ahasuerus. Comes along the mouth and pushes her hand at Haman. She was really going to point at Ahasuerus. Hashem brought the Malach down and pointed to Haman. Ahasuerus is fuming. What does he do? He goes out to his garden. Goes out to his garden and he sees gardeners uprooting his beautiful garden. Smashing it, chopping it, destroying it. And he asks, what are you doing here? And they said, following instructions. Instructions from who? From Haman. What do you think? My dear Majesty. Who were these people? They weren't people. They were Malachim. Sent down by Hashem. And his anger is burning. So he goes outside to cool off. And this, you should know, we learn out. Then a person, if he ever gets into not the best of moods, he should go take a walk. But make sure he doesn't see people destroying his garden. Because it's going to fuel it even more. He comes back in, and what does he see? He sees Haman on top of his wife, the queen. And he can't get up because there's a malach, he falls down. Haman's begging, "Ask to save my life." And there's a malach sticking his dagger in Haman's back. He can't get up. So what does Ahasuerus say? What did we say earlier? Haman had the idea to do away with the advisors when something pertains to the king. A matter pertaining to the king. In comes Charvona. Who's Charvona? Charvona is the number two Nazi. Hitler's number right-hand man. Haman's right-hand man. The number two Nazi. So Haman's like, "Oh, someone, please save me." And what does Charvona do? He tells Ahasuerus, "Take a look over there." He sees that pole. I just want to remind you, that big tree over there, that's where Haman wanted to hang the man that saved your life, Mordechai HaTzadik. Imagine the scene. Esther says, "This man wants to kill me and my nation." It fuels the fire. Ahasuerus is burning mad to take away his wife. He goes outside. They're ruining his garden. He's getting angrier and angrier. Comes inside. "Hagam lichvoish is a malka imi babayis. You're going to attack, you're going to go after my wife and I'm right here in front of you? What kind of nerve? I'm the king. What are you doing? You want to kill my friend who saved my life on that tree? Kill him now. Off with his head." The lesson of Purim is not just to smile and laugh. We drink, we have an interesting mitzvah to drink, and with this we'll end. Adela Yada ben Arar, ben Arar, the cursed Mordechai and Baruch Haman, to drink to such a degree, such a state of mind. How do you understand such a mitzvah, commandment? Midrabanan. What is the most important entity that we have that God gives us in our body, our mind, our seichel? We are mevatel our das. We are saying, you, Hashem, are in charge of everything. Atzas Hashem hisakum. That is one of the explanations to this mitzvah, that we are saying, you, Hashem, are in charge. When a person drinks properly, levesume, that the sweetness should come out. He is mevatel his das. He's saying, God, you're in charge. And that's exactly what happened by Purim time. We came to that realization, and that is what happened all these times when we had the salvations. And that's what we are asked by the Yontif of Purim to bring upon ourselves, to realize that Hashem is in charge, to mevatel our das. Atzas Hashem hisakum. When we do things, no matter what it is, hisakum, im yirtza Hashem, Hashem is with us, then we'll be successful.